Welcome to The Social Network Show. How do you feel about social technology and this connected, networked world we live in? Your host of The Social Network Show, Dr. J, interviews informed and entertaining guests to tackle the most pressing digital issues of interest to business professionals and nonprofit leaders, to parents and educators, and to anyone wondering where all this is taking us. And now, your host, experimental psychologist, Dr. Jane Karwoski.
Today you'll be hearing from Dr. Jennifer Cox. She is an assistant professor at Maryland Salisbury University. She double majored in journalism and public relations at Appalachian State University, received a master's degree as a Knight Fellow at the University of Alabama, and a doctorate from the University of Florida. Jennifer worked for several years as a newspaper journalist at various papers in Florida and has been a multimedia intern at thewashingtonpost.com, where she produced and edited multimedia packages. She's also a freelance feature writer and recently presented research at the 2015 Conference of the Association for Education in Journalism and Mass Communications. And that is what we're going to discuss with her, what research she did and what it can tell us. So welcome, Jennifer, to the Social Network Show.
Thank you so much.
Well, it's always interesting to talk with you. You've been on this show several times, and sometimes you've given our listeners tips for better journalism when they write online or blog, etc. But today, you did some research about how news organizations have started to use or are using social media, specifically Facebook and Twitter. Tell us a little bit about what your desire to know was, what you wanted to know, and how you went about finding out.
Sure thing. Well, basically, I kind of started with this idea for a larger study, just learning how news organizations are using Facebook and Twitter. It really was an interesting point to me because a lot of people say, you know, young people don't get the news. But that's actually not true. Millennials, who are traditionally age 18 to 34, they are actually avid news consumers, not necessarily on purpose, because they're getting news just kind of through their news feeds on social media, in particular Facebook and Twitter. I came across some research from the American Press Institute that suggested that 69% of millennials consume news at least once per day, which is a lot more than historically has ever been true. And then 88% of them get their news from Facebook and 33% from Twitter, which tells us that they're not usually going through the traditional channels that older people might think of, you know, going through the newspaper or watching a TV news broadcast or even visiting a news website. They're getting it through this social media network. And so it was really interesting to me. There's been a lot of research done about what kind of content, you know, TV news stations and newspapers and even online-only put on their websites or in their products. But nobody really had looked at how these news organizations are using Facebook and Twitter. And because this is such a wide and new audience, I think it's really important that we figure out if they're using these new media methods to reach their audiences in old ways, or if they're adapting and using new ways. So that's kind of what I was looking at. I looked at six news organizations, two TV, which were CNN and MSNBC, two newspapers, which were the Washington Post and the New York Times, and then two online onlys, which were Yahoo News and Huffington Post. And I ended up looking at quite a few tweets and posts and got some really interesting stuff.
So when you refer to those organizations, you were looking at their own websites, is that correct? Such as
No.
Okay.
Actually, I was looking at their Facebook and Twitter posts. I did not look at their websites at all.
Okay. So they were someone who handles social media at, say, the New York Times posts information that they draw from either their newspaper, in their case, or if they're TV, something that appeared on the television station, and so on. So, okay, I've got it. Thank you.
Sure. And a lot of times that someone who is posting that information is the reporter, him or herself. And one of the things that I looked at was, you know, are they using social media as it really could and should be used to kind of be the first stop for news? Or are they just regurgitating stuff, as you suggested, that was already in the newspaper or on the TV program or something like that? That was one of the things that I looked at, too.
So you're thinking that an ideal way would be to use it as a teaser to get people to go into more depth?
Exactly. Well, and certainly that was the thought with Twitter. Twitter, as you know, is such a great journalism tool because it forces journalists to be concise, to get to the point, to say what they need to say and get a point across in 140 characters. And that should be every journalist's goal, you know, to try and give the news in a quick and concise way, not counting on our readers to, you know, pour through a long article to get to the point. And so that's why I thought really Twitter would be a great breaking news or spot news platform. With Facebook, though, we kind of look at Facebook a little bit differently. We tend to be more visual on Facebook. People post more pictures and videos and things like that. And actually, there studies have been done that suggest that more people go from Facebook posts to the news organization's website than those on Twitter. In other words, on Twitter, you know, they'll look at the tweet and that'll be that. Uh-huh. But on Facebook, they're more likely to actually click on the post and take it to the article.
Okay, and just another clarification there for me is what they post on Facebook, they are posting that on their Facebook page?
Correct.
And then people who are signed up to get alerts from them will then have it mm-hmm. in their news feed? Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
And you can see just because of the basic differences that are inherent in the two platforms, they shouldn't be offering the same news. You know, they shouldn't just be posting everything on Twitter and everything on Facebook. They should be discriminate. And so that was one of the things that I tried to look at.
How much of a period of time did you work off of?
I did a constructed week, which basically takes seven weeks. And you pick one day at random per week. And the reason why you do that is if you wouldn't want one news event to be consuming your study. So, for instance, if there was a plane crash during the week of my study, then it would really throw off the whole study because everybody, of course, would be posting about disaster news. And so you take, you know, the Tuesday of week one, the Saturday of week two, the Wednesday of week three. You know, however it is, whatever order you get in a randomizer. And then you construct that week to get a little bit more variation.
Oh, okay.
And so it was a 7-week study.
Uh-huh. And what type of things did you look at to compare these different sources?
I looked at four main items. I looked at author type, which basically meant, you know, was the person who posted the article a staff writer? Was it something that was a contributor or an aggregated post? We see a lot of that with Huffington Post, you know, where they don't have a lot of staff writers, but they have mm-hmm. a lot of contributors or other sites that they pull their information from.
Right.
And then also those with no author, which we don't see a lot of in newspapers, but is tending to be more common in the online only. So I looked at the author type, the news topic, which it's pretty much just looking at, you know, the kind of news topics that are popular, you know, sports, crime, politics, environment, that kind of thing. Timeliness, which I was kind of getting into before, as far as, you know, is this breaking news? Is it something that revolves around a news event? So, you know, kind of coverage of a meeting or, you know, a holiday story or something like that? Or is it an evergreen, something that could run anytime, anywhere? And then also I looked at story type, which kind of allowed me to go even beyond the news topic to deconstruct the story into, like, is it a hard news story? Is it a soft news story? Is it more of an in-depth piece or an editorial or an opinion column or something like that? So it really kind of helped me to get at what are we really seeing here. You know, everybody might be posting a sports story, but maybe one is posting it as a hard news story and others are posting more in-depth stories about sports injuries or something like that. So I really wanted to come at it from a few different angles.
Okay, and before we get into the actual results that you found, what's the significance of this, the implications of it, if you find one thing versus another, as far as the public is concerned, who might be getting their news from mm-hmm. Facebook or Twitter primarily?
Yeah, I think it's really important for a couple of reasons. There's been a lot of study. The theory that I use, I'm not going to bore you too much with the details of that, but the theory that I use is called news consonance, which basically theorizes that news is the same or similar across different media. And that's bad for society in some ways, because then we're only getting one message. We're not getting really a diversity of opinions to choose from.
Right.
And so my thinking going into this would be that because of the unique qualities of Twitter and Facebook, that the news consonants would be reduced, that we would actually get more variety, because Twitter is more suited for things like breaking news and hard news, and Facebook is more suited for things like soft news and features and things like that. And if that's true, it's important for a few reasons. One, people tend to prefer one platform over the other. You very rarely talk to somebody who is on Twitter 50% of the time and Facebook 50% of the time. Usually they prefer one or the other. And so if you are only on Twitter or primarily on Twitter and you're getting all this hard news and breaking news and things like that, you might tend to think that the world is a more violent place than it actually is, or you might tend to think that it's all bad news that the media report about. Whereas on Facebook, okay, if you're getting a lot of kind of the lighter stuff, you might tend to only be exposed to the fluff and not really have any awareness of the public affairs issues that maybe are going on in your community. And so there's a lot, and so, you know, if they are segregating their content in that way across platforms, that could be really important.
That is similar to the filter idea, I suppose, that when we, depending on where we get our information, I suppose that's true of which newspaper you read in the newspaper days, that mm-hmm. it is going to present a certain view of the world. Just before we get into the rest of the study, this is just a thought I had as I was saying that, is that what is to prevent people from choosing the sources that reflect the view of the world they buy into?
Well, and you're absolutely right. I mean, that is something that has traditionally happened. You know, if you're a conservative, for example, you'd be more likely to turn to Fox News as a news source. If you're more liberal, you might choose something more like MSNBC or something like that, or the New York Times even. And so there's a lot of ways in which we go ahead and look for news sources that mirror our own images. And there's a lot of theories about that that would support that. And my thought was that with social media, if we're just following a bunch of news organizations, if we're being exposed to a broader diversity of opinions, then that actually could kind of help that. You know, we might be better exposed to more diverse viewpoints, which might expand our thinking and help us to make more well-rounded decisions.
Okay. Why don't we go into that in the second half of today's show? We'll talk about the insights gained, what the results were of Dr. Cox's study, and what insights that shows us, and also journalists, for the journalists that are listening as well. So we're only halfway through. In the second half of today's show, Jennifer Cox will share more insights about how journalists use Facebook and Twitter. This is Dr. J, and you're listening to The Social Network Show.
HashAdit.com, today's number one hashtag search engine. A hashtag is a pound sign attached to a word or unspaced phrase. It unites like-minded people on things they are passionate about. At HashAdit.com, you'll be able to search or share your unique experiences with others. Hash away on your favorite social sites like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest. At HashAdit.com, get connected and experience a world that will inspire your passions and interests. And it will instantly be shared for the world to view and enjoy at HashAdit.com. If you see a hashtag that interests you, enter it in our search box. Get inspired, motivated, or get educated on today's trending topics. At HashAddict.com, it brings every hashtag conversation in one place, in real time. Don't forget to search for the hashtag at HashAddict.com.
Questions? Comments? Reach out to us. Our email address is questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com or find us on Twitter at Social Net Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network Show, where you are hearing from journalism professor Jennifer Cox of Salisbury University. Jennifer, I enjoyed looking at the PowerPoint that you sent me in preparation for our interview, and there were some phrases that it kind of went over my head. One was spot news. What does that mean?
So spot news is what a lot of people would traditionally think of as breaking news. To simplify it, it's kind of something that happens on the spot, something unexpected.
Okay, that makes sense.
You know, there's a traditional argument of whether media react to the news or create the news. Spot news would be kind of the react side of that. Something happens and we as the media react and cover it.
Okay. And then when you were discussing consonants or the sameness of news, you use the term shovelware. What's that?
So traditionally, when newspapers and all media, in fact, first started moving their content online, we were very resistant about that. In fact, it seems so silly now, but we were afraid of scooping ourselves. And so the website was very much considered a competitor of the news product, which is it sounds crazy today, right? And so what would happen is in the newspaper industry, and this very much happened in TV as well, but in the newspaper industry, we would write an article, it would run in the paper the next day, and then we would put it online. And so basically, they weren't creating any unique content for online. They were just shoveling the content that was already in the newspaper online. And so they call that shovelware.
Okay, so kind of afraid that putting it online would diminish the newspaper or the TV or the original source. Okay.
Exactly. Very much when, you know, the newspaper and TV reporters were a separate entity from the online staff. And now that's very untrue. Now you go into a newsroom and you're expected to do both.
Okay.
And social media with quite an aptitude as well.
Mm-hmm. So what did you find?
So I found that actually, well, the first major finding that I had was that all of the news organizations across the board, TV, newspapers, and online onlys all posted more frequently on Twitter, some by almost a 2-to-1 margin. The reason for that is that Twitter is just a more adaptable site for journalists. It's easy for us to process that thought because what you can do is, you know, you can write a one sentence, kind of what we call a lead in a story, the first sentence of the story that very much summarizes what's happened. And we can go ahead and write that on Twitter and then work that Twitter post right into our story and keep writing. So it's a very easy way to publish news quickly, to get information out quickly. And so it wasn't too surprising that we saw that. The one interesting thing, though, was that the only organization to buck that trend was CNN. They actually posted more frequently on Facebook than Twitter. They were the only organization to do that. And the reason I'm thinking for that might be because they are such a visual medium. They have so many videos and photos that maybe they just kind of thought Facebook would be the better platform for it. And in reality, it is, because as I suggested earlier, more users actually will click from Facebook posts to the news organization's website than they will on Twitter. So in reality, all news organizations should be using Facebook more than Twitter, but Twitter just seems to be a more, an easier tool for journalists to use and to adapt to. And that was actually something that came up, a question that came up during my presentation out in San Francisco. And that was kind of the conclusion that we arrived at, was it's just easier for journalists, even if it's not quite in their best interest. Beyond that, there were some really significant differences in the authors. I found that the online-only organizations, Huffington Post and Yahoo News, were more reliant on contributors and aggregators. And again, that's not really surprising because we see that the Huffington Post has very few actual staff writers. Most of their stuff comes from, you know, contributing bloggers, or, you know, they pull it from other websites and post it. And then at the bottom of their story, they'll post a link to the actual article or something like that. And obviously that has a lot of journalists upset, but that's what it is. And then newspapers are still mostly staff produced. We're really not reaching outside of our own newsroom to bring content to you, or to give content on social media. Television fell somewhere in between. There really were no significant differences either way. So they're doing a little bit of all of this. As far as the news, the topics, there was actually less variety than I would have thought, except in a few of the obvious areas. Newspapers on Facebook didn't post very many law or crime items, which again makes sense because Facebook really isn't the home for that. We tend to think of Twitter more as like for crime or breaking news, things like that. And then online only posted more entertainment items on Facebook. And again, makes sense. Facebook is more visual. And so we, you know, typically when we're posting entertainment items, there's a video or there's a photo or something like that. On Twitter, there were a few more differences. TV posted more law, crime, and political items and fewer business and economy items than the others on Twitter. Online posted more disaster, environmental, and entertainment items. And newspapers actually posted more sports items on Twitter, which again makes sense because a lot of journalists will go out to games and instead of waiting until the end of the game to write a story, they'll live tweet the entire game.
Oh,
and so
right.
It's not surprising that we see that too. Whereas, you know, with television, they have to be broadcasting the game, so they're probably not devoting the time to tweeting it out. And so that's a lot of just facts and statistics to tell you that there is some difference in what newspapers, television, and online onlys are posting on Facebook and Twitter. There are some differences, but they're not monumental differences. You know, there are differences in some of the expected areas, and then not so many in others, which suggests that news consonance that we talked about before, that sameness of news, still does kind of exist and on these platforms. Same thing with timeliness, very few differences on either platform, except for the obvious. Newspapers posted fewer of those spot news, breaking news items than any of the others, which again makes sense because newspaper reporters aren't used to having to turn around a story in a few minutes. We're used to having a 24-hour news cycle. And so we're still adjusting to that. And then on Twitter, TV posted more spot news and fewer of those evergreen items, those ones that can run anytime, which again makes sense because they are more adapted to breaking news and they don't have as much time to devote to stuff that's you know, more long-term like newspapers can. And then finally, on the story type, there were some differences here, but I don't want to bore you with all those details, but I do want to mention that television posted more self-promotion items on both Facebook and Twitter. So more tweets and posts that say, hey, you know, Anderson Cooper's show is coming on, catch it tonight at 7 o'clock. That's a really unique use of social media that really news organizations haven't had before because you're not, you know, sometimes they'll talk up somebody else's program on the TV news show, but, I mean, rarely you'd see it, you know, interjected into the news content. And so I thought that was really interesting that TV was kind of the only one taking advantage of that opportunity.
It's something that you would expect the others to do more of.
I would think so. Now, with newspapers, I mean, there isn't really a whole lot that they can promote. Some newspapers, you'll see them maybe promoting a town hall meeting or, you know, a tweet up, a Twitter hangout or something like that. But there really isn't much that newspaper journalists are doing at this point to connect with readers in a new or meaningful way. With online only, it's the same kind of thing. There really isn't, I mean, they could kind of promote their other products or they could promote, you know, random videos or stories, but TV definitely is the medium to do that, and they are using it. And so that's kind of showing that even though they're all kind of equals on this social media platform, they all have the opportunity to break news and break the same news at the same time on these platforms, that there are still some important differences between how TV works, how newspapers work, and how online onlys work.
And basically the variety of viewpoints, or, you know, being exposed as members of the consuming public, that hopefully we would want to get a variety of viewpoints so that we know we're maybe sure. making more of our own choice, as opposed to just blindly following even though they may be a trusted advisor, you know, taking all of our, it's just like, to me, buying all products from a certain manufacturer because you like a certain one or several exactly. of them doesn't mean that everything is going to work best for you. So we always come back to the so what question. What is the message that you would take, not just for consumers, but also from the news channels, the online TV and the newspapers? What does your study and its results tell them and us?
Well, I think the most striking thing is that, from what I saw, the news organizations tend to mirror their traditional content with social media. They're not really looking at social media as a new and interesting way to do different things. Now, that being said, I did look at crowdsourcing, which typically, and the reason why it's not even in that PowerPoint that I sent you was because it was so insignificant I couldn't even find traces of it. But I do know that the news organizations are doing this, and crowdsourcing is basically reporting in a new way that involves the audience. It's saying, hey, you know, traffic, we want to do a story on the worst intersections in a city. Readers, what do you think? Tweet us with your thoughts on what you think the worst ones are. That would be crowdsourcing. Or, you know, hey, we heard that there is a disturbance at this place. Did anyone witness this? You know, using social media to kind of throw it back to the audience and make the audience a part of the reporting process, which I think is a really unique opportunity that we have with social media. I also didn't see a lot of things as far as transparency, which I think is a really important thing that news organizations can do online. And I'll kind of explain that concept. So, you know, with newspaper articles and television news broadcasts, we're very limited in our time and space. You know, a 1 minute long story on TV news is long. A 15-inch article in a newspaper is long. And so we have a unique opportunity online and through social media to kind of let readers into the process a little more, to say in the article, you know, here's what this is, and then online or in social media to say, here's how we got this information. Here's why you should believe this information. Here's what makes it credible. And it's something that we're not doing yet, that I'm not seeing a lot of. And that could just be that maybe the larger organizations that I'm studying, you know, really aren't or don't have the time or inclination for that. Maybe it's happening more on the local level, which would be an interesting place for me to go with my next study. But for right now, we're pretty much using social media in the way that we've traditionally always used our own platforms. You know, TV's posting its crime stories and breaking news and self-promoting its shows. Newspapers are posting more in-depth articles and public affairs and features and things like that. And online-onlys are kind of falling in between breaking news and entertainment, just as we've seen them do really since their start. And so, you know, it would be interesting to see them use social media in a different way. But at the same time, it's kind of nice to see that news audiences, these millennials who are using social media to get their news, probably as their only means of getting news, they're at least being exposed to the same kind of information that the rest of us are. And so they're going to be hopefully better informed than traditionally millennials or young people of that generation have been.
Okay. Well, I thank you a lot for summarizing your interesting study. And I know that there were great many presentations there. You probably heard many things from your colleagues while at the conference. What particularly caught your attention with the other presentations?
Well, I heard some really great presentations in my session alone. There was a really great discussion as far as the ones that the study that I did and how it linked to the other ones in my group. One of them was a survey of social media policies in U.S. TV newsrooms, which is really, really interesting to me because a lot of news organizations are just starting to adopt social media policies. You know, we see a lot of times where journalists will get in trouble for tweeting something or posting something that's unprofessional on their Twitter or Facebook pages, and then they get fired, and you wonder kind of what are the legal ramifications here? You know, was they posting as a reporter or as a private citizen? Do journalists even have the right to be private citizens? Do we ever get to post our opinions? And so this study looked at that and found that only about half of the TV newsrooms that they surveyed actually had written policies about, I think, and you'll have to forgive me because I didn't memorize it, but I think like 20 to 30% described it as just kind of being a verbal policy, an understanding. And then the others really didn't even have any kind of policy. And so, you know, I'll give you an example. When a reporter had been covering a trial all day, a very gruesome, you know, murder trial, was very difficult and all this, and had been tweeting all day. And then the last tweet of the day was something about, hey, you know, meet me at the bar. It's been a long day. And, you know, and that's something that any of us would post on our social media probably, but it's not the most professional thing. And so, you know, that reporter would get in trouble, obviously, for posting that. It would be kind of inappropriate in that professional setting. But as a human being, we can understand that. So, you know, there's a lot of rules that journalists have to abide by that others don't. For example, journalists aren't allowed to put campaign signs in their yards. It would show favoritism. You know, we're not allowed, business reporters aren't allowed to own stock in any company that they might be reporting on.
Hmm.
Obviously, that could be a conflict of interest. So there's a lot of strange little rules in journalism that most of the general public don't know, where we try to at least create some sense of independence from any conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm.
But with social media, I mean, we're such pioneers here. We're right on it's like the Wild West right now. And so we don't even know what's right or wrong. We don't even know, you know, what's going to get us into trouble and what won't. And so we, you know, it's important that these newsrooms try and figure it out and have a written policy before more people get fired without really any basis, without really any ground rules.
Well,
that one was really interesting.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective, and it certainly draws a distinction between the professional journalist and the, quote, citizen journalist, unquote, that we mm-hmm. have so many mm-hmm. of. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Jennifer, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and we always learn so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for listening. We hope you subscribe to the Social Network Show podcast on iTunes, Stitcher.com, TuneIn Radio, Audio Boom, or on our own website blog page so that you can automatically receive each show with our wonderful guests and important topics. You can follow me on Twitter at Social Network Show 2. That's the number 2. And if there is something that you'd like to hear about, please get in touch via email. The address is questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. So until we welcome you here again, please have fun and be safe online and off.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the worldwide show dedicated to social media networking and understanding the connected, networked world we live in. Listen to our archive shows on thesocialnetworkshow.com and follow us on Twitter @SocialNetShow. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia Incorporated. The views and opinions expressed are those of our host and guest and may not be the views and opinions of Social Network Intermedia.